It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is a numbers game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Happy to be with you. I'm Jeff Parles in for Gil Alexander. And let's just dive right into it. Of course, the program brought to you by BetMGM. And now with us, True Media Sports, it is Paul Carr. And Paul, last night, first off, I'll be completely honest with you. The one you didn't win was the one I thought you should have won, and the one right. You won was the one you should have lost. That shows how ridiculous this can be from time to time.
Yeah, we talk about it a lot. The margins are so thin in soccer, obviously not many goals scored in general, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, Qatar outshoots the U.S. 18-6. Misses a penalty, but U.S. gets the late goal, and U.S. survived basically the onslaught for 75 minutes and then played pretty well in the last 15 minutes, ended up with the goal and the win. And Mexico, yeah, maybe they outplayed Canada a little bit.
And Paul Carr is Paul Carr is frozen on the Paul, you still with us?
I'm here.
All right, we'll get you back in a second here. We'll just rearrange real quick, the two games last night, for what Paul was saying, Team USA was pretty well dominated, actually, for the first 70 minutes, and then a late goal to survive there in Austin, and then Mexico with a 99th-minute goal last night to survive against Canada. We got Paul Carr back. We just have to have only your voice here instead of the picture here this morning.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, you said it. Mexico, maybe a little better than Canada for the most part, but the old 90+9 stoppage time goal to get the win on my part. So, yeah, it worked out well in that game. The other one, I mean, I'm not upset because I'm rooting for the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the old heart versus head sort of thing going to war there.
So, Paul, finals just down the road from here at Allegiant Stadium here in Vegas. Mexico, a slight favorite right now. Again, well, actually not too slight, but they are a favorite against Team USA right now in the three-way line, plus 135 on the consensus odds on Team Mexico. USA plus 220, the draw at plus 195. Paul, I have a feeling on where you're going here, but based off what we've seen from USA in this tournament, it's going to be a tough ask for them to beat Mexico here.
It is, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday, how the U.S. has, you know, roughly a B team. You know, there's a handful of these guys who would make a World Cup qualifying roster if it were tomorrow. And Mexico has much closer to an A team. And for two countries, you know, we saw this in the Nations League final. Mexico's probably a little bit better, but it's close enough that the game can go either way pretty easily. But when if you don't have the A team for both, it's going to tilt toward Mexico's favor in this case. So yeah, I like Mexico to cover the half goal in regulation. Plus 130 is my price. Plus 135, you may find around as well. I just think they're a little bit better. They showed really that last like few minutes against Canada, especially. They have kind of this extra gear. They're not going to tire out like Qatar did in the last quarter hour or so. They're just simply better. This again falls into the don't overthink it category a little bit. Certainly, the U.S. could be stout defensively and sneak a win out. That's how they've kind of done it historically against Mexico. But Mexico is the better team. I'd be very interested to see what the crowd is like in Vegas for this one. But yeah, I like Mexico by half a goal here.
Tickets sold out in 16 minutes for this game. And Paul, my anticipation is it won't be obviously like it was in Houston last night for Mexico, Canada, but I would imagine that this is going to be a Mexico leaning crowd here in Vegas for this one on Sunday.
I would think so. I mean, pretty much anywhere in the U.S. that the U.S. plays Mexico, it's a pro-Mexico crowd in a big stadium. You know, for World Cup qualifying, they're playing them in Cincinnati. They've historically played them in Columbus, where it's a smaller stadium. You're in a part of the country that has less Mexican population, and you're able to control the tickets a little bit more. But yeah, I would expect a pro-Mexico crowd in Vegas. That'll obviously help them out, but it should be a good one. It's always fun when the two get together. That Nations League final in June I was at, it was insane. I don't think this will be that crazy, but you never know.
Well, that was, of course, at Mile High in Denver. Look, hopefully no incidents from the crowd. That's what we're rooting for. I would imagine security at Allegiant Stadium will earn their paychecks pretty nicely for that one. Again, that is going to be at Allegiant Stadium just down the road here in Vegas, a 6 o'clock Eastern time start for Team Mexico and Team USA in the Gold Cup final. Again, the two favorites pre-tournament playing in Vegas on Sunday. As we are live here on A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Paul Carr with us right now of True Media Sports. Paul, on Mexico in regulation to beat Team USA in the Gold Cup final, which is being played on Sunday afternoon here in Vegas. Paul, before we let you go, drama in Tokyo this morning in the States and nighttime in Japan. What a game that was between Team USA and Netherlands. A 2-2, a penalty saved late in regulation by Team USA to get to extra time, and then winning in a shootout on what was just, in all honesty, a perfect strike by Megan Rapinoe to finish off the Dutch. And Paul, this bracket kind of opened up a little bit. Canada upsets Brazil. The United Kingdom gets stunned by Australia earlier in the morning. Sweden took care of their business, but we're on a USA-Sweden collision course yet again all of a sudden, Paul.
Yeah, that would be a fun rematch. And if you're the U.S., you definitely want to play Canada over Brazil. I don't know that on average the Brazil-Canada difference is all that high, but Brazil's got a lot more upside. U.S. has struggled more with Brazil historically. The U.S. is unbeaten in something like 30-some-odd straight games against Canada. It's like 30 wins and four draws. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's in that area. It's kind of a big sister, little sister sort of thing for these two teams. And the U.S. finally played better against Netherlands today. You know, they looked at times like we're used to seeing the U.S. kind of pressing forward on the attack, et cetera. So that was maybe the most comforting part. And I haven't seen the numbers, the lines out for the U.S.-Canada game yet. I would lean toward the U.S. just because, again, it's a big sister, little sister sort of thing. And until Canada can actually beat the U.S., you know, it's hard to go with them. It also, it reminds 9 years ago, these two teams played in an Olympic semifinal. You might remember it was a 4-3 game, went to extra time. Alex Morgan scored right at the death. One of the better games I've ever seen in soccer. So I don't know if that we'll get that, but it should be a fun one.
And none of the country will be up for it unless if it's a late night, since, of course, it's the 4 a.m. game, which East Coast time.
So the U.S. men kick. Kickoff is 7 hours before the U.S. women's game starts. So it'll be about 4 or 5 hours between the end of one, start of the other. So, yeah, sleep cycle is going to get all messed up if you want to watch both.
Yeah, just either take a nap or just load up on the coffee or just have a fun night before, whatever strategy you employ. there's no judgment from either of us here. He's Paul Carr. Get him on the tweets at Paul Carr, True Media Sports, and ESPN Chalk as well for Paul. Thank you for being with us this morning, Paul.
You bet, Jeff. Have a good weekend.
You as well. Paul Carr, of course, on Mexico for the final of the Gold Cup. Laying a half a goal, or again, just take him into three-way money line for regulation plus 130 on Mexico. Paul Spohr is going to be with us momentarily here. Oh, actually, Paul Spohr is actually already with us. So let's just go right into Paul Spohr here. From one Paul to another on the tweets at Spohr. Of course, you can get him on Twitch, get him at Fangraphs at well. Paul, has anything happened in the last 2 days in baseball? I'm not sure of that or not. Nothing, right?
Nah, it's just chill. Just chilling right now. Oh, man, what a deadline, you know, and there's so many years where we're like, oh, this could be a huge deadline and it's a total dud. But then you get those special years where it actually pans out, and this is one of them. This felt like it could be a massive year. And I mean, we haven't even had, like, yesterday felt like the deadline day. Mm-hmm. And so we could still have a bunch of stuff happen today, although I'm just seeing news. Not that this, like, kills the day, but the Rockies are so stupid. Apparently they're not going to trade John Gray. They are such a brain dead team. It's unbelievable. I don't know how they do it, but every year at every turn, they show just how inept they are.
Well, let's just start there, since look, I'm always okay with Colorado bashing just because of what that front office has done to that franchise more than anything in the ownership group. But look, the Rockies have one of the big names that have not been dealt that we still assume will be dealt today in Trevor Story. Chris Bryant, another big name. Craig Kimbrell. Of those names, Paul, that have not been moved, before we get to the guys who have been moved, where do you anticipate these guys going today? Or will we have a shocker with some of these guys actually standing pat, even though wouldn't shock us if Colorado decides, oh, we're going to keep Trevor Story and just go for the draft pick here?
Yeah, I mean, again, they're so inept that I couldn't even say I'd be that surprised if they don't trade Story as well. But the only news I saw was that they don't plan to trade John Gray or Daniel Bard, which again is just so aggressively stupid. It's impossible. Kimbrel will be dealt. It's hard to say exactly where. I think Philly wants to get in on that and really solidify their bullpen. They had that really shocking win yesterday coming back against the Nats. I think they want to do something. So I think they're going to be active. And who else did you say? You said Story, Kimbrel, and who else?
KB, Chris Bryant.
Oh, yeah, and Chris Bryant, I think definitely going to be dealt. The Giants feel like a really good fit for him because he could, he plays the four corners. He can play center if you need him to, but that's not where you want to put him every day. But usually left, right, first, third. So, with Belt and Longoria out, he could play either of the corners there. As they come back, he can move to the outfield. I think he's a really good fit for them, and they got to do something here. They still have the lead. A lot of folks didn't think, myself included, didn't think they would continue to have the lead like this in the division, and yet here they are. If they stand pat, I think it'd be pretty embarrassing. I really do. It's a three-game lead, and they've been playing well, but this team is not infallible. It wouldn't make sense to just completely sit on your hands. Yes, KB is going to cost you something. Like, you're going to have to pay, one of your big pieces. Because rentals are costing more this year. It is a seller's market for sure, but you got to do it. You have the lead. It's not like you're fighting for the one game wild card. You're fighting to stay alive in that division lead and get that full series of the playoffs. And then who knows what happens when you go from there. So if the Giants don't do anything today, and I mean something substantial, I'm not talking a reliever or a fifth starter. I'm talking something impact. It will be really surprising and frankly disappointing. And if I were a Giants fan, I'd be really upset if they don't do something today.
Well, and Paul, you bring up a good point here, because even with the Dodgers acquiring Scherzer and Turner from the Washington Nationals, mm-hmm. if you're the Giants and you somehow hold it together, win the division here, you would at least throw the Dodgers in a scenario where, hey, it's a one and done playoff game. We have seen weird things happen in these one-and-done playoff games where we could have a roster that is going to be close to an odds-on favorite to win the World Series, and they could go out in game 163 just because it's baseball, Paul.
Well, it'd be them and the Padres probably. The Padres are going to do something today. They're going to counter. They lost Scherzer. We heard the news that they had Scherzer come in, and then all of a sudden they didn't. So they're really focused on Barrios. Preller is going to do something, right? Like, I don't think this is going to happen, but don't be surprised if they go get Story or something insane mm-hmm. like that. I know they were the one organization, I believe, that was rumored to maybe want to put him in center field. Again, they are out there. They'll do whatever. And I love that and respect that about the Padres. They're going to make some moves today. I think Barrios fits them very, very well. And it's a pretty good consolation to Max. Max is obviously a god. Make no mistake about it. But getting Barrios would not be the end of the world, especially when you look at like a 2-month run. The difference between those two is not going to be that big. Obviously, the Dodgers also got Trey Turner. But yeah, if those two end up playing the wild card game, one of them's obviously going home. And yet, on paper, they look like they should be the NLCS, but the math just isn't there for that right now because they're both sitting in the wild card situation. So I think the Giants would be saying that they really don't believe in their team if they don't do anything, and they're kind of conceding to the Dodgers. That's how I would view it.
Paul Sporer with us here on A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network. Get Paul on the tweets at Sporer. Of course, find his great work at FanGraphs. And Paul, let's just go into that mega deal that happened yesterday. Max Scherzer, Trey Turner from Washington to L.A., the Dodgers sending back their two best prospects in Ruiz and Gray and Carrillo and Casey, pretty good prospects as well, going the mm-hmm. other way. And Paul, it was no shock that Max Scherzer got dealt, but there were correct. Rumblings going into the last 2 days. Oh, Trey Turner could be a name that is surprisingly dealt because the Nats have been unable to reach a contract extension from him. But for seeing both of these guys go to the Dodgers with Corey Seager coming back today, with Mookie Betts on the horizon, it's just the embarrassment of riches for the Dodgers. It's almost intimidating to look at for trying to bet on any other team, period, in baseball at this point.
They're going to put, when Betts is back, they're going to put the player of the month or you know, a strong candidate for, I should say, A.J. Pollock on the bench. And that's, I mean, that's bananas. He's been excellent this year. He gets no run in L.A., and all he's done is just been an awesome player with them. But yeah, he's had a huge month, an 1163 OPS and seven homers. And my dude is going to go on the bench once they're fully healthy. I didn't even realize until it was coming out on the trade deal that Seager was coming back today, which is just bananas, you know, because I was like, oh, well, Trey will play short until Seager's back. No, he won't even get there in time before Seager's back. They will get there together. And that's just crazy. Obviously, Seager or Turner is on the COVID list, so he actually might not be there for a little while at this point. But the team is insane. And I know there's some folks that was like, oh, is this bad for baseball that they have all these resources and everything? I really don't see it that way. I mean, yeah, they're obviously a powerhouse, but it's gotten them to a lot of World Series, but they've won one. It's not like they win every single year and they're unquestioned and unchallenged. They're not even winning their division this year. So for all the hand-wringing that we're going to see about the trade, about how it's bad for baseball, I'm not going to be able to hear any of it when they're not even leading their division. Because baseball, you know, things happen, and they haven't been healthy at all this year. Now, they are set up for just a colossal run in October. I grant that. But I don't think that this is inherently bad for baseball. Plus, they gave a lot. Like, it's not like they ripped them off. You know, we see some trades in other sports, namely basketball, because the way the finances work, where stars go to other teams and contracts get moved around and ends up where the loser team gets, like, one pick. And they took on some, you know, they lost some money and they got some cap space to give a superstar to one of the five teams that can compete for the title every year. Baseball doesn't have that problem. We are in a bit of a haves, have not situation right now, but there's not only five teams that can win the World Series. There's definitely more than that. And you're going to start to see these teams that are in the back end really start to come up. Obviously, as a Tigers fan, I'm hoping my Tigers continue their ascent. By the way, they've sat on their hands. And if they don't do anything today, I'm going to be absolutely livid. But yeah, I think the Dodgers, you know, they're going to be set up brilliantly, but nothing's guaranteed, especially if they don't even pass the Giants. Because then, like we said, they got a one-game coin flip against somebody, whether it's the Padres or somebody else, and they can lose. That, like, it's one game of baseball. It doesn't matter. You could put the Marlins in that game, and they could feasibly lose, but obviously it'll be a much better team than that. So if they don't even win the division, then I don't want to hear about how, like, this is the worst thing in the world for baseball, because it's not. It's fine, and they did have to give up a lot to get this done.
Paul, and again, I think we can't stress it enough. The wild card game we have seen. Look, the Pirates in 2015 won 98 games and were done in the first inning of the wild card playoff against the Cubs. There are other ones. The Cub team in 2017 that had no, or excuse me, 2018, I should say, that had no business being in a wild card game, lose a one game playoff to the Brewers and then flip around and lose to Colorado the next game. We have seen wild results. And again, the Padres, if it ends up being Dodgers Padres, we're probably talking about the two best teams to ever play in a wild card game, playing in a wild card game in the same season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like those teams are so stacked. And again, especially on paper, we'll see what the Padres do today to counter, because they will make moves to counter. And if they end up in that wild card game together, it's going to be absolutely insane. And truly, I can't wait for it. It'll be wonderful. I mean, we've seen them play multiple series this year that have been really exciting. That one game would just be off the charts. And, you know, one of those teams would have to go home and then get to face the Giants.
The whole, as good as the Padres are, I think the whole National League playoff field would be very content with the Padres if they had managed to win that matchup, if it was San Diego and L.A. in the wild card playoff. Paul Sporer with us here on A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Paul, we have about a minute and a half here. I just want to ask you about the two moves the Yankees made, because they were the worst team in baseball with left-handed hitting this year. And now they have two just perfect fits in Joey Gallo and Anthony Rizzo playing in that short porch at Yankee Stadium. They're amazingly right in the mix in the wild card race, Paul. Is the are these?
Wait, you mean they're not 70 games back?
No,
hey,
look, your Seattle Mariners really helped out the Yankees this past weekend when taking care of business against the A's. But look, these two moves, Paul. Even though the narrative would still be, oh, this is a team that isn't really any good. These two moves, I think, put them in a level where, all right, they'll find a way and they'll at least get into the wild card playoff. And will they win that wild card game against Tampa? Who knows? But we'll it's see. One of those that at least you're giving yourself a better chance.
Yeah, I think they're really setting themselves up nicely. And getting Gallo, who they have beyond this year, is a good protection in case things don't come to fruition for them. I wouldn't be surprised if they still make a move today on the pitching side, whether it's a reliever or a starter. But, you know, again, with all the talk of this team, you would think they were 50 games under. Instead, they're 53-48, 3.5 games back, which, you know, is a deficit to be sure. But I do think that they've got a great opportunity to still get this done here. You know, Seattle is obviously trying to get there as well, and Oakland's a quality team. They brought Starling Marte, but what they did yesterday, getting Gallo and Rizzo, was insane. It was awesome. Well done by Cashman, and like you said, they addressed their biggest need, left-handed bat.
He's Paul Spohr. Get him on the tweets at Spohr. Get him on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/Spohr, and get his work on FanGraphs. Paul, let's enjoy these next few hours, shall we?
Sounds great, Jeff. Take care.
Thank you for being with us today, Paul. When we get back, we're going to go back into the NFL awards. We're going to go see what Jason Kahn has cooked up for us here to see what markets are available. That's next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Today's episode of the Ron Flatter Racing Pod features Saratoga Live TV host Lafitte Pinkeye discussing tomorrow's Vanderbilt Handicap and Jim Dandy Stakes. John and Mike Bard remember the late Dale Bard, whose record as North America's winningest trainer is about to fall. Las Vegas horse player and bookmaker Paul Zilm handicaps this weekend's races. Subscribe now, iHeart, Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, or download it today at VSiN.com/podcast for the Ron Flatter Racing Pod. And as always, it's brought to you by First Bet. It is a numbers game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jeff Parles in for Gil Alexander. Gil is back on Monday. So Gil will be well-rested, 2 weeks off. He'll be ready to go as the calendar... The calendar flips to August on Sunday. It does not feel like it flips to August, but I don't think any of us are going to complain because that means we're 1 month away from football beginning at the NFL level, non-preseason games, obviously, and then week zero is 3 weeks away from Saturday. So we're in great shape there as the calendar is getting over ever so closer to Dallas and Tampa Bay week one on the Thursday night. Speaking of the NFL... our producer today, Jason Kahn, producer number 7, as he's known in these parts on this show, put together the awards for us to go through them here today. All these odds, of course, from BetMGM. As we discussed before, right now, the only ones I really like that I would consider betting, Aaron Rodgers, Baker Mayfield, those two in the MVP market. Mayfield, if he can get a 40, that's pretty good, 40-1. Rodgers, 12-1 or better, go ahead and bet Aaron Rodgers. Offensive rookie of the year, Zach Wilson, if you can get a 10-1, 9-1, I would look at Zach Wilson. No plays on defensive rookie of the year. Comeback player of the year here for BetMGM. So Dak Prescott is the correct favorite here at plus 180, of course, off that significant dislocated ankle. Just a horrible injury he suffered early in the year last year, plus 180. Saquon Barkley at 5-1, torn ACL. Christian McCaffrey, who dealt with a multitude of injuries last year, at 6-1. Joe Burrow, Nick Bosa, Carson Wentz at 8-1. Not really the traditional sense for Wentz. Wentz was just horrible last year. Didn't deal with any injuries. Bosa, ACL tear week two. Burrow, of course, the whole knee going on him against Washington in the middle of the season. So... I do think Dak wins this award. Plus 180, though, is a little too short for my liking. Joe Burrow, to me, is the only other bet here. Because there is a path where Burrow, we talked about it last week when we talked about the AFC North. I was concerned about Joe Burrow being healthy out of the gate. He's not on the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list, for folks who don't know what that stands for. He's ready to go. And from what we saw pre-injury from Burrow, behind a terrible offensive line, and it's still pretty bad, by the way, and a wide receiving core that actually is even better. And I already thought that wide receiving core was pretty solid as it was. I like T. Higgins. Tyler Boyd is one of the more underratedly good wide receivers in the league, and you add Ja'Marr Chase to the mix, it's not impossible Burrow has a humongous year, even though it doesn't calculate to a ton of wins for Cincinnati. So Burrow would be the only one I'd consider here at 8-1. Let's get another award here as we roll along here on a numbers game. NFL season a month away, a little over a month away. Coach of the year. Okay, so Jason Kahn is invested in this one. He's on Arthur Smith. He's on Sean McDermott. And this one, again, here's the deal. You have to go book by book here because the numbers are all over the place. Kevin Stefanski is your favorite at BetMGM. Kevin Stefanski is 12-1 at BetMGM. At other books, he's as high as 30-1. So we talked about this a little last night on Primetime Action. It is very hard to win this award when your team is projected to be good. So it's going to be hard for Stefanski to repeat. It's going to be hard for Andy Reid to win this award. It's going to be hard for Sean McDermott to win this award. And same deal with John Harbaugh as well at the bottom of your screen at 20-1. Just because those teams are expected to be good and they were elite teams a year ago. The only bet I'd consider, and this is the best number I've seen on Brandon Staley, if you can get 18-1 on Brandon Staley, 16-1 on the coach of the Chargers, that would be the bet I would make. Just because, again, the Chargers seem to have a little bit higher expectations than some other teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. But if the Chargers win close games, go 11-6, which is definitely in play for them, Brandon Staley's probably winning this award just because of what they were under Anthony Lynn and turning quickly into a winning team. The narrative's going to be in favor of Brandon Staley. And again, this might as well be not even the Coach of the Year award. It might as well be, hey, your team overachieved and you happen to be coaching said team. You're getting an award out of this. When we get back here in a numbers game, we'll reset all my predictions and who I think is going to end up lifting the Lombardi this year. That's next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, on a numbers game.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game. Gil Alexander.
The VSiN College Football Betting Guide is live. And to throw my opinion in is extravagant. Start your football season on the right foot with our expert analysis and picks for conference champions, Heisman hopefuls, and playoff teams, plus power ratings for every team. It's also a great time to get your all-access VSiN subscription, including our college and pro betting guides, along with everything we have to offer the entire football season. Get your college betting guide right now. It's only $19.99. Or start your free all-access trial today, VSiN.com/subscribe. And also, too, the pro football betting guide is coming soon. Speaking of pro football, here on a numbers game, I'm Jeff Parles in for Gil Alexander. No slow jamming today with Vinny Malua. Vinny got out of town for a few days. Can't blame him. We're getting to the point where no one can take a vacation in this business because of football season. So get your vacations in July and August. So Vinny will be back next Friday with Gil. So you'll have to wait a week for slow jamming. JVT's with us in 10 minutes. Westbrook trade, NBA draft. A very unfortunate injury in the Olympics for one Aaron Baines that we'll have to discuss with JVT in 10 minutes. But we've been doing this for the last 2 weeks, my NFL predictions for this season. And let's just dive right in. Our 7 playoff teams. The Chiefs get the 1 seed for the second consecutive year. Cleveland, again, Cleveland I have 2 bets on. We're betting them to win the division. We're betting them over 10.5 wins. They get the 2 seed. Buffalo wins the AFC East yet again, even with a lot of noise coming out of Western New York over the last few weeks. They're still pretty clearly the best team in the division. Minus 150, worth a bet, in my opinion. The Titans, I will bet them to win the AFC South for the second consecutive year at a plus price. They get the 4 seed. They get a nice little matchup with Baltimore for the second consecutive season. So the Ravens come in at the number 5 seed. It'll be interesting to see what's going on with Lamar Jackson, who tested positive for COVID earlier this week. Second positive test in a little under a year for Lamar Jackson. But plenty of time to get right, a little over a month from the beginning of the season. Baltimore, of course, opens their season here in Vegas on Monday Night Football in Week 1. The Chargers, there you go. That's the one new playoff team in the AFC. No Steelers. Welcome, L.A. Chargers get the 6 seed, and then Indianapolis repeats as the 7 seed. I have them getting in on the virtue of a tiebreaker over New England. They play each other Week 16 in Indianapolis. I have the Colts winning that game. That's why Indy is in instead of New England. Going through this AFC playoffs, very simple, simply here. We'll get to the NFC in a second here. AFC Championship game, I have Cleveland and Kansas City. The top 2 seeds get to the AFC Championship game for the second consecutive year. I do have the Chargers upsetting Buffalo. I do have the Ravens upsetting, even though it wouldn't shock me if Baltimore's favored in that game for the second consecutive year in the playoffs, beating Tennessee. Seed upset. But I have Cleveland over Kansas City in the AFC Championship game. The Browns go on the road to Arrowhead and do something that they could not do a year ago. Cleveland making the Super Bowl for the first time in any form of the franchise. Doesn't matter if it was the old form or the new form, but I do have Cleveland in the Super Bowl this year, beating Kansas City in an upset at Arrowhead Stadium in the AFC Championship game. Let's go to the NFC. Here's your 1-7. 3 teams out of the NFC West is the big story here. I have the Rams as the 1 seed. Now, I've gotten a little colder on this over the last few days. After going through it a little more, knowing Aaron Rodgers is back, knowing Tampa has all 22 starters, but in the end here, I really think Matthew Stafford ends up being an MVP candidate and a massive improvement over Jared Goff. And that's what pushes the Rams to the 1 seed. And look, elite defense, we know that. We know that defense is going to be great. They have an elite head coach in Sean McVay. And the Rams will not have to leave Los Angeles en route to a Super Bowl appearance if they were to get there. Green Bay wins the North with ease. Look, I think the NFC North after Green Bay is going to be a mess. And the Packers will take full advantage of a mediocre division and get the 2 seed. Tampa gets the 3. They win the NFC South. New Orleans underachieves. They're going to go with Taysom Hill too long. That's why an easy coasty division championship for Tampa. Washington football team repeats as the NFC East champions. The defense is great for a second consecutive year. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Finally, the elusive playoff appearance is there for Ryan Fitzpatrick. By the way, that is a bet. I bet Washington to win the NFC East at plus 250. I forgot to mention, I did bet Green Bay futures as well. All those numbers are gone. Those numbers have been moved since I bet them on Green Bay. Even money behind us here at the South Point was my favorite bet to win the NFC North. That's now minus 200. That moved about a day after we gave it out here on the program. The wild card, San Francisco bounces back from just a brutal year a year ago. They stay healthy. Jimmy G has a good year to get the 5 seed in the trip to Landover. Seattle with a there's 18 weeks now. A week 18 win over Arizona, get into the playoffs as the 6th seed, and that win over Arizona helps Dallas sneak in at 9-8 to get the 7th seed. Pretty chalky in the postseason. Tampa handles Seattle. San Francisco is a road favorite, wins in Washington. Green Bay beats Dallas. The Rams beat San Francisco. Green Bay gets revenge on Tampa to beat them in the divisional round. And the Rams, second Super Bowl appearance in 4 years for L.A. They get there. They never have to leave L.A. Second consecutive year after going 54 years without a team playing in their home stadium. We get it back-to-back years in Super Bowl 55 and Super Bowl 56. The Rams come out of the NFC. But unlike last year, and boy, if this goes awry, I'm sure I will hear it on social media for this. It is Cleveland. It is L.A. There you go. The Cleveland Browns are winning the Lombardi Trophy this year. In a sentence I don't think anyone ever thought they would utter, This is the, by the way, that 100 to 1 on the bottom of your screen, that is the exact result prop, which does exist in plenty of jurisdictions. BetMGM has it at 100 to 1 of Cleveland beating the Rams in the Super Bowl. Cleveland to meet the Rams in the Super Bowl, I think, came in at about 55 to 60. So that moved up a little bit, 60 to 1 for the exact matchup, 100 to 1 on the Browns beating the Rams. Look, Cleveland's defense is going to get better from what it was a year ago. And that offense is elite. And they have the right coach in place. You know what this situation reminds me of a little bit, Jason? This reminds me of the Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl championship run. Now, I'm not saying Baker Mayfield's going to get hurt and Nick Foles is going to magically appear, but this team's pretty similar to that. Great offense on paper going into the year, a great offensive minded head coach, a defense that improved significantly from year one with Carson Wentz to year two. The Cleveland Browns, they're my Super Bowl pick. 100 to 1 over the Rams as the exact result. Cleveland coming in at about 12 to 1 to win the Super Bowl at most books right now. Boy, what a party that would be by the lake if Cleveland somehow wins the Super Bowl. JVT could be with us next. We'll ask him about a big night in the association yesterday. That's next on A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Turn a $1 wager on the Cardinals or Twins into $100 with BetMGM. If either team hits a home run, just use the bonus code VSIN100 when you sign up for the King of Sportsbooks and get ready for showtime. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com for more details and make sure you use the promo code VSIN100. That's VSIN100. It's a new customer offer, paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older to place a wager. Colorado, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, Washington, D.C., or West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan disassociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. 1-800-270-7117 in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. In Tennessee, call or text the red line, 1-800-889-9789. In Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. And a promotional offer not available in the state of Nevada. It is a numbers game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Final segment for me in this nice two-week run-in for Gil Alexander. He's back next Monday after another vacation for Gil. He'll be ready to go with a big-time lead into the football season. But now with us, it's our senior NBA analyst here at VSiN, JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, with us right now. JVT, before we get into Aaron Baines slipping and hurting himself in Tokyo, which could damage your Australian future a little bit. Let's just go into the biggest news of the night in the NBA, even more than the draft. Russell Westbrook's going to be a Los Angeles Laker. And JVT, on the surface, I understand why the Lakers are doing this. Get a third superstar to go along with LeBron and AD, but how does this work fit-wise with Westbrook going to the Lakers?
You understand it more than I do then, because I don't really get it. You mentioned it. It's just the fit, right? Look, this is a team, Jeff, that last year finished 21st in three-point shooting, 35%. We'll round it up to 36 because it was 35.6%. They were 24th in three-point attempts per game. This is a team that needed to add shooting, and yet they got rid of a shooter in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to add a guy who shoots 34% throughout his career. I think it might be a little bit lower than that. And now all of a sudden, like, you're talking about your spacing being completely jammed up. You know, ESPN threw out a projected starting lineup on social media. It was Russell Westbrook, Talen Horton-Tucker, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Mark Gasol. Mark Gasol by far is the best shooter on the floor in that lineup at 36%. That is not a lineup that is going to get you anywhere. That is a paint that is going to be clogged up. That is defenses that are going to be shading off Russell Westbrook to, of course, stop those drives to the basket by anybody named Anthony Davis or LeBron James. Talen Horton-Tucker in his short career is only at 28% three-point shooter. shooter. Like, there's just no threat from beyond the arc. So I just don't get it from a fit perspective. And look, you know, I am very much not like sky is falling hyperbole guy, right? So we'll see how this roster shakes out because they're not done building it out. It looks like Dennis Schroeder, you would think, is not going to be part of the options going forward. So they sign and trade him for something. Who knows? But at this point right now, if that is going to be your starting lineup, if you're going to get maybe, I guess Alex Caruso could be your starting two guard, like that's just not a lineup that is fit for today's NBA, man. Like Buddy Hield was such a better option for them if that was going to be the case. And on top of that, the reason why Buddy Hield works too is because he didn't get rid of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in that deal either. So I just don't really understand it at this point right now. And I want to be very clear. Russell Westbrook, Jeff, last year was one of the key cogs behind the Wizards going 17-7 and getting to the postseason. He was very good for the Houston Rockets before the hiatus in the COVID year and got injured and caught COVID before they went to the bubble, and still was a very big reason why a lot of people actually picked the Rockets to beat the Lakers in that Western Conference semifinal series. So there's positives to Russell Westbrook's game. This is just about fit, and I just don't see it.
Well, and the point that I think is the most important one that you made there, JVT, the rumors leading into this deal were Buddy Hield's going to go from Sacramento to L.A., and that fit was just perfect for what the Lakers needed. And now, I mean, it's laughable. Marcus Gasol being the best three-point shooter on a starting on a projected starting five is something that just can't happen in this day and age in the NBA.
Yep, and look, their payroll's still pretty light, so we'll see what they add. Like, there's a universe in which they add quite a few shooters to this roster, right? And then you go into the regular season and you do what the Rockets did, which is, remember, the Rockets staggered Westbrook's minutes quite a bit. He got a lot of run with the second team, and so he, of course, led his own unit. And you would get half-court-oriented James Harden offense, and then you would get up and down the floor, you know, Russell Westbrook-led offense. And that works, right? The Rockets looked pretty good to a certain extent. But remember, the Rockets also got rid of Clint Capella that year so they could play Russell Westbrook. He was essentially their power forward because the shooting and the spacing was so bad when Clint Capella was out there, and Russ was too. So there's this just, again, right now, if they're rolling this out, it's not going to work. This is all on that front office, Palinka and everybody, to make sure that they're constructing this roster the proper way. But I will say, we have now had quite a few years with Palinka, you know, pulling the trigger on a lot of these things, and the roster construction has not been great. And yes, they got a title out of it. It was an incredible run for LeBron James and Anthony Davis. There was still a flawed roster from construction standpoint, and I haven't seen really much that makes you feel confident that they're going to be able to do it this time around either.
JVT with us right now here on A Numbers Game. Get him on the tweets at me, JVT, of course, our senior NBA analyst here at VSiN. And JVT, let's just go into the other news of the night, the NBA draft. From a betting perspective, 1, 2, 3, they went the right way. Went a little haywire at number 4 with Scottie Barnes going to Toronto. And then, to me, Orlando getting a gift with Jalen Suggs falling in their lap at number 5. But as we look through this top 10, and this, there were some surprises in here. Josh Giddey going as high as he went, number 6 to Oklahoma City. Davion Mitchell actually going in the top 10 to Sacramento. And Zaire Williams, who went 8.5 slots ahead of his draft slot to New Orleans. Again, that pick is being conveyed to Memphis at number 10. But JVT, for a draft that we thought was going to be pretty set in stone, at least through those first 5 picks, that Scottie Barnes pick at 4 really set in motion what was a pretty chaotic night from the betting markets perspective.
Yeah, you know, and I think when it came to Scottie Barnes, that one wasn't so much out of the, like, left field, right? It was surprising, though, just because the reports in the hours leading up to the draft were like, yeah, you know, we knew that they had worked out Scottie Barnes, and we knew that Scottie Barnes was in contention for that pick, but that everything had pointed to Jalen Suggs being the guy that was going to be in that spot. And then you go from there. You know, the real, I think, the one that started, right, the slobber knocker that got us off to a really weird start, number 9, Davion Mitchell to the Sacramento Kings, a guy whose draft position had been moving. You know, I got 10.5 over at -125. He closed 12.5, right? And over, shaded to the over, about $1.30, $1.40. Every indication was that he was going to go in like the mid-teens to late lottery. And yet here we are, the Kings, who selected Tyrese Halliburton last year, who have De'Aaron Fox on the roster, right? And now all of a sudden go with another point guard and Davion Mitchell. So it looks like we're going to have 3 point guards on the floor for one time for the Sacramento Kings. Just not a fit in any way whatsoever. How about Josh Primo, right? Yeah. Josh Primo, a guy whose draft position was 27 and a half, if I remember correctly, and then goes 12th to the San Antonio Spurs, and the other being James Bouknight, because Bouknight was interesting. All indications were that this guy wasn't getting out of the top seven, right? We saw his draft position plummet from 10 and a half to 6.5. We saw an index prop at DraftKings that said he was a minus 1,200 favorite to go within the top 10, and he ends up going 11. And so if we're talking about those early selections from Primo to Bouknight slide to where Davion Mitchell went, Zaire Williams, to your point, it got pretty nutty within those picks. It was pretty insane to watch all that go down throughout that that time period in the first round.
Yeah, I'm happy you brought up Josh Primo, because that was, of all the picks that happened last night, and look, I like Davion Mitchell a lot. I did expect him to slide out of the top 10, even though, again, if I was picking at the back end of the top 10, I would have considered doing what Sacramento did. But Primo at 12, JVT, of all the picks we saw last night, him at 12 and actually to Sharif Cooper falling as far as he did to all the way to the back end of the second round at Atlanta, able to scoop him up at 48. Those were the two biggest surprises from last night for me, JVT.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. And, like, you know, there were some surprises. We should also note that there were some things that kind of went status quo, right? You know, one of the guys that I was in on when you're talking about Usman Garuba, right? He was a guy that opened up 15 and a half at his draft position, closed at 17 and a half. He ends up going 23. Jalen Johnson seemed to be quite the lock to go right past his draft position of 14 and a half. Character concerns, all of those things would happen in his youth and leading up to his stint in the NBA. He goes 20th, right, to Duke. So there were certain instances in which you saw these guys what you expected. Chris Duarte, right? Duarte was a guy we expected to start making his way down. The draft position prop worked in that direction. He ends up going 13th to the Indiana Pacers. So as much as there was some chaos, there was also some normalcy to what happened yesterday. But I think also, too, Jeff, this is, to me, like, there's a couple of examples when it comes to the NBA draft and any draft. We know that information is key, but it's always a type of information you're getting, right? And what I mean by that is, let's take a look at Moses Moody. So Moses Moody goes 14th, or as Kendrick Perkins likes to say, Moody, Moses, Moses, Moody, Moody, Moses, Mosey, is... When you saw Moses Moody in a lot of these mock drafts, you saw him consistently creep up in a lot of the mock drafts that were getting released. But if you read the analysis as to why Moses Moody was getting selected by teams in mock drafts, it was all because of fit, all because of his play. It was never centered around intel, right? And there was never really a report that said Team X is looking at Moses Moody. And so sure enough, his draft position prop ended up dropping, ended up closing 10 and a half, and he ends up going 14. And I brought this up to Mitch yesterday on Follow the Money, which was Moody was an interesting piece because every indication, if you just read the mock drafts on the surface, was that he was going to go within the top 14, 13, 12. But it wasn't tied in any information. It was just tied into, this guy's a good 3-and-D player. He should fit here. And I think that's always really important when you're taking in those mock drafts to realize some of these picks are based on information. Some of them are based on conjecture, why they might fit in a selection. And, of course, not all teams think the exact same way.
He's Jonathan Von Tobel. You can get him on the tweets at me, JVT, our senior NBA analyst, and, of course, the host of Hardwood Handicappers as well. Get that at VSiN.com/podcast. JVT, thank you for joining us this morning. I know you've had quite the week being on Follow the Money as well. So thank you for staying awake and not taking a nap and joining us this morning.
No problem. I caught a couple of Z's while I was waiting for you guys to call me. So I'll see you.
There you go. He's JVT. Again, on the tweets at me, JVT. The Lombardi Line is next here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles. This has been a fun 2 weeks. Big thanks to Jason Kahn, producer number 7, for keeping me in line while sitting in the chair here for Gil. Gil's back on Monday. So, hey, look, the king of sports betting content back on Monday here on A Numbers Game. I enjoyed this. It was a lot of fun. The Lombardi Line. Coming up next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This has been A Numbers Game here on VSiN with Jeff Parles. Gil back on Monday.